get into chapter 3 in the same context of what we've been talking about. He gets into another relationship, one that is very controversial in the world today, a relationship between a husband and a wife. What should the wife be to her husband? And what should the husband be to her wife? That's even controversial in this day and age. And these things, obviously, we need to go into with an open mind, understanding that God's ways are higher than our ways. And throughout all of this, we need to submit to His will in everything. In chapter 3, beginning in verse 1, he says, "Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging the hair, wearing gold, or putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God. For in this manner, in former times, the holy women who trusted in God also adorned themselves, being submissive to their own husbands, as Sarah obeyed Abraham, calling him Lord, whose daughters you are, if you do good and are not afraid with any terror. Husbands, likewise, dwell with them with understanding, giving honor to the wife as to the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers may not be hindered." And so you can see just by looking at all of this, whether it comes to the submitting to the husband, or the husband being in understanding with them and being gentle with them and all of these things, or whether it even be the concept of not the mere outward arranging of the apparel and the silver or the gold and the jewelry and all this stuff. So many things contradict the world standard of what it should be like. World standard is all about outward appearance, hardly anything about inward appearance, at least according to the standard which it should be, the gospel. With regard to women's rights and such, such a good thing, but it's also brought a lot of hardship upon the country because women are getting outside of the roles that they were made for in the family, and getting outside of the expectations that were made for them with regard to their relationship to their husband, the relationship to their kids, and ultimately obstructs their relationship with God. So a lot of controversial stuff with regard to this. And in other places as well. Ephesians 5 is a good example. The relationship between Christ and the church paralleled with the husband and wife relationship. A lot of controversy there. It says, be submissive to your own husbands. It says likewise before that. So in the same manner as verses 13 through 17, be submissive to the government. In the same manner as verse 18, be submissive to masters. You also be submissive to your husbands. Submissive, the same term, obeying and subjecting yourselves to being in the place that is prescribed for you in relation to government, masters, and husbands. It says that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. So a question may come, and it may be even a problem with regard to some individuals in the church. What if the husband is not a member of Christ's church? What if the husband isn't a Christian? Doesn't change anything. So you kind of have the similar situation as with masters and governments. What if they're not doing what they're supposed to do? What do I do then? Do I have to submit? Does that exempt me from this rule? And certainly not. And there's a reason for this. There's that obvious foundation in the structure of the home that Christ has built, which is a rule that everyone is subject to, even those outside of His church. When you talk about the marriage law, when someone divorces for any cause other than fornication, but they're not Christians, was it a sin? Does it apply to them? Absolutely. And this is the same manner. Do individuals have to submit to those individuals who aren't Christians? Absolutely. Husbands to wives in this relationship, right?
Unfortunately, today, many women are having to take leadership roles in the family because the males will not do it, mm-hmm. or don't want to do it, or will not do it, so it's actually forced upon them to have to do that. It's more and more, I'm talking about especially young people I see, a lot of them, the women are taking on family because the males are too lazy, right, or don't want to do it, or that's not my job, you take care of that, or whatever. But, so it's, they're negligent in what they're supposed to be doing, right, too, which hurts the situation also.
Right. in that situation, you do the best you can, but ultimately, God knows, and the husband has a responsibility he's not fulfilling. So he's going to have to answer to that. No matter what his excuse is, too much work, so I want to come home and not do anything and not look after my kids spiritually or any such thing. Or maybe it's just I'm too wrapped up in this situation, so I can't work, neglect them in that way. He's going to have to answer that for as well. So there's that those different sides we see and the different excuses even that we see. Since my husband is a slob and, you know, a sack of potatoes, I don't have to listen to him or submit to him. Well, we read here that even if those who are not believing, which implies that they aren't doing what they should do, they could be doing everything they're supposed to do with regard to supporting the family, with regard to, you know, all those different civil things and physical things. But if they aren't a Christian, they're ultimately not doing what God wants them to do as a husband and as a father. That's leading spiritually. That's leading the home. But even those you submit to. And there's a reason that even if some do not obey the word, they without a word may be won by the conduct of their wives. There's an importance in this with regard to strategy and trying to bring a husband into the gospel and into obedience with it. And ultimately, as we've been talking about, something that God expects of us. Instead of arguing with the man, instead of bickering toward him or talking behind his back, being rebellious toward him, I don't have to do this because you're not a Christian. Why should I have to obey you or whatever, submit to you? You need to do it without a word. I mean, that doesn't mean you don't study with them. It doesn't mean you don't implore them to obey the gospel and beg them to consider things and all of this, but you do it with your conduct. And that's what's expected by Christ, expected by the gospel. This is the ultimate way to win a husband over. And while I'm talking about this, I know I'm not a wife, I know I'm not a woman. So if there's any wisdom from those experienced in the congregation, just feel free to put your two cents in about this and maybe why this is even logical with regard to our way of thinking. This conduct is ultimately going to lead them to the gospel. They watch you. They observe you. They look at you. Some they know they're the man in the house. And so there's that sense of entitlement or that sense of leadership or whatever it may be, whether it's abused or whether they're using it in the way that God expects them to use. They're aware of you and what you're doing. They're aware of your conduct. They're aware of your love for God and how important these things are to you. And that has an effect on them, whether they submit to that effect and have it changed in their lives or whether they're just going to ignore it. It's ultimately something that will have a positive effect on their minds. Any comments or questions about verse 1? It goes a little bit into what the conduct is. In verse 2, it says, when they observe your chaste conduct accompanied by fear. What is chaste conduct? Do what? Modesty. Good behavior.
What happens? I mean, I've seen it happen, what we talked about before. The husband eventually develops a respect for that wife.
Mm-hmm.
And as things go along, that respect, they want to please the wife. Or what they see is, it gets them curious, you know, why are you respectful of me? Why are you respectful? You know, why do you do this? And that leads to conversations, and sometimes it does bring about, makes them curious and want to please the wife because she has pleased them.
Right.
And to be closer to them, that's usually what has to happen or what will happen when they're turned. It's where I've seen several instances where it does work.
Absolutely. And obviously, this is coming from the wisdom of God. This is the best way to do it. This is what's going to work. There may be instances where something else happened. You know, perhaps the wife wasn't in the place she needed to be, and she was bickering. She was being that wife that is opposite of what Christ is saying with regard to submission and without a word. And maybe for some reason that did work. But that's an exception. It's not the rule. I mean, that's not the expectation. That's something that is unpleasing to God. So ultimately, without a word, chaste is often in the context in Scripture when it's translated is with regard to sexual purity. That's ultimately included in this. But even more so, it's broadened to just general purity. That has with regard to anything. He'll go on later talking about these holy women in times past that the individuals look up to, specifically referencing Sarah in verse 6. That holiness is that being separate and apart from the world, and by implication is purity. Included in that is purity. So this chaste conduct is being pure from every fault. I mean, obviously, no one's perfect, but it's that concept of trying to be pure from every fault, and that being the common occurrence within your life. That's how you're walking, in other words. You may slip up every once in a while, all I've seen and fall short, but this is the direction you're going. You're walking by faith. You're walking in chaste conduct and in purity. And so that's ultimately the reason why they may be won over, because you're subject to God's law and you're living it. And that's accompanied by fear. There is a lot of, well, I don't know about a lot of, but there are moral people in this world who are not Christians. People that just aren't filthy, impure, terrible people going through all the immorality they could partake of and filling themselves with all unrighteousness, but they're not obedient to the gospel. Well, they're doing that because it's something they want to do. It's something that is their value. It's not God's value. That's why when you talk about the fruit of the Spirit, well, they have a lot of the fruit of the Spirit. No, they don't. If they're Christians, they have the fruit of the Spirit because they're doing it because God prescribed it for them. If they're doing it just because they want to, or maybe that's how they're raised, that's a value they hold, great. But that's not accompanied with fear toward God. It's that cognizance of God. It's that Godward piety, the godliness that we're expected to be filled with. And that's the ultimate reason why this should win over the husband. In verse 17 of chapter 2, it talks about fearing God. In verse 18, it talks about fearing God. It says, be submissive to your masters with all fear. That having reference to the fear we should have with God, following that theme that he talked about in the government. And that's the reason you do these things. If you have any doubt about it, this doesn't make sense. This isn't logical. Why should I have to submit to someone who isn't a Christian? Why should I have to submit to someone who's treating me wrong with the government and with the masters? You do it because you have a fear for God, and that's what he expects you to do. Fear God and keep his commandments. So that's that conscience toward God. In chapter 2, he says, this is commendable because you have conscience toward God. You endure grief and suffering wrongfully. That's because you're cognizant of him and his will and his expectations for you, and you want to please him rather than men. So you endure it. You go through it. And ultimately, you are having chaste conduct because of your fear toward God. God told you to do it. God expects you to do it. And that's why you're going to do it. Not for any other reason. I mean, there may be other reasons that fall as subsets under this. And it may be logical that they follow. This benefits you in some way. So you're going to do it. You're going to act in that way. But the ultimate reason that is preeminent above all else is because you fear God and you want to do what would please him. Any questions or comments about those few verses?
And to me, it's like because you love him so, it's a fear of displeasing him.
Right.
Because he loved you so much. It's not like if you do owe him, it's kind of that, but it's more like I'm fearful of displeasing him. Because that's how you show the love for him or whatever.
Right. Yeah, there's many aspects of that. We should want to please God so much that if we displease him, fall short in some way, it makes us feel terrible. We don't want to feel that way. So there's that fear of displeasing him. So you do everything possible to please him. There's that fear but just because of his nature. This is what you're made for. This is what you're expected to do. Don't fear him who can kill the body, but both body and soul in hell. There's that fear. There's many facets of this. The reverence that should be held in respect toward God and in light of this, the situation you're in with him, you should be doing it for that reason. But yeah, that's a good point to bring up, that you don't want to displease him. You may say you're in fear of displeasing him, so you want to do everything possible to please him.
You know, just being in the situation we're talking about, in verse 2 about the respectful behavior, you know, Bill and I can have conversations about what we do, and they not, you know, they don't get heated, but like if he says something that I know is sort of, you know, you know, like he can push the button, you know what I'm saying? Because he knows
yes,
by 20 years of marriage what I'm going to let him talk about, and then it's going to say, you know, Bill, you're coming over the line of, you know, really it's bothering me what you're saying because it's, right. You know, it's against God and everything. And he knows that, and he knows, like, especially when he'll say, you need God, I don't need God. He's like,
I could see where that would bother you.
You know, like, it's a need I don't have. That you have, so you and the kids go do that, but I have not developed a need for that yet. I'm not saying I won't, and he does put that out there, which always gets me out of it. But that, so there's a respect, and I let that go. But,
right.
You know, like that's our line of saying kind of thing. It always ends up with that statement. Like,
yeah.
Whatever discussion goes to, it's always that right there.
Right.
So you need more intelligence.
Well, in a narcissistic way, yes, it is. You need him and I don't, so I'm a bigger man, and I'm, you know, that's just that pride in, you know, that I don't have a need for.
Southerners would come to another
relationship.
And I'm sure with that relationship, it's gotten better, it's grown.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why, because you're doing what you're supposed to do, and he sees that. And so with that comes that expectation of some kind of result. Something's going to happen, whether it eventually leads to the obedience of the gospel and he's reverencing God and doing what he's supposed to do as a created being and fearing God and keeping his commandments, or it gets better and it leads to it. You can see the progress in that. Maybe not in every relationship, but if someone is doing what they're supposed to be doing, then it could lead to that.
What can work, not work in that situation, is sometimes the men become jealous of God,
yes,
and they want to push their buttons or try to get them do things to go against that because I want you to love me more than you love God. And that's when it doesn't work, is when a man's in that position where he's jealous of God or your relationship with God, then hopefully he'll get past and see past that.
Yeah.
And
with regards to that, that can be the same relationship as government to citizen. If you got a king or a dictator who wants the attention, you love me or you respect me and you obey me more than God, you know, he gets jealous and then things happen. Especially with a despot like we're talking about in Daniel, with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You know, you do what I say, not what God says. No, we're going to do what God says, so I'll throw you in a furnace of fire. Well, with husband and wife, that may lead to some uncomfortable situations, some things, abuse, verbal, physical, whatever, or maybe he's just unfair to you in ways that he wasn't before, and the rule still follows. So you have that understanding that you submit to those who even aren't doing what they're supposed to, as long as you still obey God, as long as you still give yourself to God and obey him rather than men. That submission in that relationship is there. In verse 3, he says, "Do not let your adornment be merely outward, arranging of the hair, wearing of gold, putting on fine apparel. Rather, let it be the hidden person of the heart, with the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is very precious in the sight of God." Some would say that this means you can't wear jewelry, or you can't wear something. So what would be the problem with that?
The problem is, can't wear dresses either then.
Exactly. Apparel. That's one way to
do it. But I mean, he's just putting importance on this. He's not saying
exactly.
You can't do this. He's just saying this is what's more important than all that external stuff that you're doing that make yourself look nice.
Right.
The more important is how your heart looks.
Exactly.
Not that it's wrong, but what the order of importance.
Yeah. And when you get to that understanding, your heart's going to reflect, or your outward appearance is going to reflect your heart. In 1 Timothy 2, the same language used there about the apparel and all that stuff, 1 Timothy 2 and verse 9, he says, "In like manner also the women adorn themselves in modest apparel, with propriety and moderation, not with braided hair or gold or pearls or costly clothing, but which is proper for women professing godliness with good works." So women professing godliness with good works, who have propriety and moderation, who are modest not only in character, but in their apparel. That could be not enough apparel or too much ostentatious dressing. And this is the general understanding, is the too much. You've got all of this stuff on. Well, your heart or your outward appearance is going to be reflected by your heart. A woman professing godliness, a woman doing these things, is going to be dressed modestly. It's going to exhibit propriety and moderation. That's what he's saying in 1 Peter chapter 3. He's saying, you let it be the hidden person of your heart. So it's the inward man, not the outward man. And if your mind is set on the inward man, then the outward man's going to follow in the way that's pleasing to God.
The idea here is you can dress to look nice, mm-hmm. but if you overdress or underdress strictly to get attention,
mm-hmm.
that is the whole idea.
Right. And that's what ostentatious dressing is. Attract people's attention. And it can go both ways. The other way is not considered ostentatious, but a lack of clothing to attract attention. But even a lack of clothing, you're just ignorant of it, attracts attention. You know, there's obviously God's law with regard to that. But yeah, to attract attention, you are wanting to get attention, and so you do this. And that's a reflection of a bad heart. And you look at this, what he's talking about is still winning over a husband. And so don't let your adornment be merely outward, doing these things. Let it be the hidden person of the heart with the uncorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. So don't try to win your husband over by wearing fancy clothes, by making up your hair. You know, win them over by what person you are, the hidden person of your heart. I don't know many situations where a person that is not obedient to the gospel would be obedient to the gospel because you dress fancy. But you don't want to win their respect over or their admiration over because you dress nice, but because you have a reverence toward God and you're showing it in each and every day of your life. So that's the general concept of this. It's talking about the character, your love for God, and your adornment inwardly, not outwardly. Says, let it be the hidden person of your heart, the incorruptible beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit. We talked about earlier in chapter 1 that you were not redeemed with corruptible things like silver or gold. So these silver or gold things that you're dressing with and braiding in your hair and having on your person, these things are going to fade away, perish, just like your body is going to perish. So even the hair goes in with that. But your character, your spirit, what you have in respect toward God is not going to fade away. This is something that's incorruptible, and that's a beauty that's incorruptible. You'll get old and wrinkled and all of this stuff. You'll maybe lose a necklace or an earring, but you're always going to have that understanding of the gospel, and it's always going to be up to you whether or not you display that in your life.
You know, when you're raising your sons, because everything is so, I wish I had instilled in them more, I guess, I probably made fun of the modest dress or made fun of people overdoing it. Mm-hmm. You know, but more so instead of making fun of it, saying the value of that is so.
Right. Because it's the opposite of what a normal person would think. But someone who's conscious of God's will is going to think differently.
Yeah, I guess that's it, to make them more conscious of what.
Right. Yeah.
Men are very visual. And women know that. And that's why they
do it.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Well, and yeah, if you're honest with yourself, you'll admit to it. A lot of people, girls that I've talked to, they won't admit to it. Even Christians, you know. I'm not doing it to attract your attention. Well, maybe not me, but the guy over there that's better looking than me, yeah. You're probably doing it for that reason.
I just want to make myself feel good.
Yeah. But yeah, that's the general reason. And I'll just say now, with my own opinion, more and more women that come out with that logic and express that with their honesty and admit to it, you know, it's going to be more apparent to those who just are shut off from it and have seared their own conscience with it. Need to understand that that's your reason in doing so. It says, with the gentle and quiet spirit. What does gentle mean?
Not combative.
Some translations with meekness or meek spirit. What that means throughout Scripture, in James 1, you see, receive the implanted word with meekness. That's generally accepting God's dealing with you and then submitting Him to do that. Accepting it with good and without disputing or doubting. So there's that concept that's gone throughout all of this. You have a fear of God, a conscience of Him and His will, and you win your husband over with that characteristic. You're a meek individual toward God. And with that meekness, they're going to see that.
Meekness also means self-control.
Do what?
Meekness has a meaning that's called self-control.
Right. Absolutely. When you look at Jesus, He was the most powerful man on earth. But a lot of people probably wouldn't see that living in that time. They'd think He's a wimp and all that stuff. That definition of manhood today is the opposite of what it is for a Christian, because a Christian man is supposed to be meek. And so that self-control, Jesus could have done. He wasn't restricted by the laws of physics and nature. So He was powerful beyond any of our comprehension, but He was in self-control. That's a very good point. And with a quiet spirit, so that goes back to winning them over without a word. That goes back to without bitterness or fussiness or arguing. That's winning them over in that way that is acceptable to God. And that's what He says. These things are precious in the sight of God. If you're ultimately living to please God, do these things. Don't do these other things. If your husband would rather you dress up nice and look good all the time, even if it attracts other men and all this stuff, you know, and forget about pleasing God, no, you do this because it's precious in the sight of God. And He'll see that. And that's part of winning Him over. We're running out of time, so we'll get to verse 5 there next time in 1 Peter chapter 3. Any comments or questions before we...